By way of a prayerful beginning, I'll read to you tonight from Philippians chapter 3, verses 6 and the following. Paul is writing and he says, I was born of the race of Israel and the tribe of Benjamin. I was a Hebrew, born of Hebrew parents. And I was circumcised when I was 8 days old. As for the law, I was a Pharisee. As for working for religion, I was a persecutor of the church. As far as the law can make you perfect, I was faultless. But because of Christ, I have come to consider all these advantages that I had as disadvantages. Not only that, but I believe nothing can happen that will outweigh the supreme advantage of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. For him I have accepted the loss of everything. And I look on everything as so much rubbish, if only I can have Christ and be given a place in him. I am no longer trying for perfection by my own efforts, the perfection that comes from the law, but I want only the perfection that comes through faith in Christ and is from God and based on faith. All I want is to know Christ and the power of his resurrection and to share his sufferings by reproducing the pattern of his death. Paul was a man of the law, a man of what they call in the Hebrew the Torah. And the Paul who wrote that letter was one who had learned another way to the Father, a way to God, Jesus. Frequently in the last three evenings, we've been comparing Jesus the prophet, Jesus the teacher, to the great prophet and the great teacher, Moses. And there have been many lovely comparisons, which you can go back and recall. But tonight I want to focus on the very, very central one. Because Moses was particularly important because he was the one who gave people the Torah. The Torah, T-O-R-A-H, it comes from a word meaning casting dice or die. In order to discern, a very primitive method I'll admit, but to discern the way of God. And it was the overall name given to that way of God, the will of God, as revealed to Moses. The essence of this way is expressed, I suppose most beautifully, in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4 to 9. This is a prayer that the devout Jew was expected to pray each morning and each evening of his or her life. And one can well imagine Jesus following that custom. It was one of the scrolls that were wrapped up in the phylactery worn by the Pharisees. And it was one of the scrolls placed on the gate or the door of everyone's house as a constant reminder for reasons I'll give you in a moment as we read it. And now this captures the very central point or the center of the road to God as the Hebrew religious people understood it. Listen, Israel, Yahweh our God is the one Yahweh. You shall love Yahweh your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. Let these words I urge on you today be written on your heart. You shall repeat them to your children and say them over to them, whether at rest in your house or walking abroad, at your lying down or at your rising. You shall fasten them on your hand as a sign, and on your forehead as a circlet. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. That central path of the Torah, love the Lord thy God with all your heart and all your soul, that spirit, as it were, spread out Moses himself, then Joshua, and then the judges, and down through the centuries, into a whole complex system of legal prescriptions or enactments of law. In fact, when the Greek Bible translated the Torah, the word they used for Torah, N-O-M-O-S, nomos, was the Greek word for law. Because the Torah ordered human behavior in such a way that people would follow the way to God, or the way of God. So you can understand the reason for choosing the word law for this extraordinary cultural kind of and complete statement of how to love God with all your heart in all the varying circumstances of our life. Now those various legal prescriptions, trying to see how do you love God as a nomad, how do you love God as a farmer, how do you love God as a merchant, and so on. Over the centuries, it all built up. And it was all placed, as you'll find if you read the five books of the Pentateuch, Genesis, Exodus, Deuteronomy, Numbers, Leviticus, if you read those books, they're all put, in inverted commas, under Moses, or Yahweh saying to Moses. I think it's easy to see why that is. We've already seen, for example, the book of Isaiah, which covers 200 years of prophecy, all placed under Isaiah, because it's the spirituality of Isaiah. It's Isaiah's insight worked out over those couple of hundred years. We might talk about Carmelite spirituality in the same way, or Franciscan spirituality, or Ignatian spirituality. And it's a whole journey of thoughts. But they didn't think of it, as I'm now explaining to you, as far as I can tell. They didn't think of it as them drawing out the implications of what Moses had seen centuries before. They saw them as finding what was already in seed in the revelation to Moses. They were just finding something there and then expressing it in words, in a law. So they could honestly say, and I suppose to an extent rightly say, that they were simply explicitating what Moses saw on the mountain and what God revealed to Moses. Let me not go into that any further, because I don't hope I don't need to. The only thing I want to say is they have an image, the rabbis, about these various laws, as we would call them. They call them fences. Fences around the law, or fences protecting the law. And I think that image is rather a good one to get into the psychology of it, because if you're walking along a road and it's fenced, then if you find yourself going through a fence, you might be intelligent enough to think, oh, I might be leaving the road. But you're not far off the road, because you've just gone through a fence, huh? But if you find you go through another fence, and another fence, and another fence, well, you're in danger of never finding your way back, aren't you? You're kind of drifting a long way from the road. And so, I suppose the laws acted as warning devices to people. If you walked near a grave, which was one of the laws, if you walked on the Sabbath, if you didn't fast on a certain day, if you broke all these various laws that were there, then they were all warning signs to you. Hey, you're drifting away from the Shema, Deuteronomy chapter 6. They weren't all of equal importance, but they were all part of Moses' revelation from God, showing the way to go. Well, plenty of psalms rejoice in having the Torah. Who wouldn't want to know the way to go to God? Who wouldn't want to have God reveal the right way to us? And so the Jews and Samaritans and other people of Israel rejoiced and delighted in this wonderful gift that Moses had received from God on the mountain and handed down. The early Christians in the scriptures, just putting it very simply for a moment, there are a number of texts which indicate that Jesus was seen by his disciples to be the one who showed the way much more beautifully than Moses had ever done. Jesus himself is recorded as saying in Matthew 5:17, I didn't come to do away with the law, with the Torah, with the way that Moses showed you. I didn't come to do away with that. I came to perfect it. I came to bring it to its perfection. And if you change the image of a way for a moment, it's like he was the flowering of the spirituality of Israel. He was the one who refined it and showed it in all its beauty. That was his aim. He says, John 14:6, I am the way. And the way, when the word way is used, which was early Christian church was called the way, behind it lies the word Torah. The Torah. He is the one who reveals the way to God. Luke 2:32 has that beautiful old man Simeon holding the little baby and saying how this child is to be a light to enlighten the Gentiles, the whole world, and the glory of your people Israel. So, putting it simply, Jesus, compared to Moses, was seen to be perfecting also this most beautiful gift that Moses had given the people. But, and now we shift gear for the first time in these series of lectures, not everyone saw it that way. In fact, Jesus was killed by his co-religionists, if we could call it that, the high priest, Sanhedrin. Jesus was killed precisely because they judged that he had broken the Torah, that he was a false prophet and a heretic. So I think we need to look at this tonight a little as best we may to see what was the problem. Why were the Pharisees so opposed to Jesus? Why were the scribes who knew the Torah, why did they not see Jesus as the flowering of it? Why didn't they agree with Peter and Andrew and James and John? Now, if you look up the textual material, the reference to John is there. John 11:45 to 53 is the trial before the Sanhedrin in John's Gospel. Now, I'll do it very briefly. John makes out that the main reason was sheer political pragmatism. That the basic reason Jesus was condemned was because there was a likelihood of a riot gathering around him because people were attracted to him, among other things, and they might have trouble with the Romans. And you recall the famous saying of the high priest Caiaphas, it is better for one man to die than for a whole nation to be subdued by the Romans, etc. So get him out of the road, lest we lose our position in the peace of the city and so on. A pragmatic political decision. There was obviously more to it than that. Because you find in Matthew 23 and in Mark 7 and other texts, the Pharisees weren't just politically pragmatic. They really were accused by Jesus of being hypocrites. Hypocrite is one H-Y-P-O, crit is a judgment, crisis, crites, judgment. Hippo is to judge, hypo, under, not above, but under. It's to judging from too small a view, too narrow-minded is a perfect word for the technical meaning of hypocrite in Greek. And in English, as we use the word, of course, hypocrite is narrow-minded in the sense that you're judging only according to external show. But there are many other ways of being narrow-minded, as it were. And the Pharisees, Jesus kept accusing them, it was their understanding of the Torah that was wrong. They didn't see the Torah for what it was. So if that's the case, we're really into a very crucial question. What was the nature of the Torah? What is the meaning of law? What is the place of law in anyone's life?